Well, the investments you make in your home can make the home function better. Sometimes it can add to the value. Sometimes it can take away from the value. But with all the different options to weigh, I know it's hard sometimes to make the best decision on what you should do with your home. That's why we have some experts for you today. Chad Spate, been with us many, many times, who owns Chad's Design Build, comes by every couple of months to talk with us about he's really here to make sure that your home stays in good shape and is as energy efficient as possible. And Chad, good to see you.
Thanks, Larry. It's always great to be here.
And welcoming in for the first time, Elizabeth Swick. Elizabeth, an architect for BWZ Architects in Middleton. And Elizabeth, welcome to the show and thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Larry. I'm glad to be here.
It's really great to have you both here. You know, as we think about space, we want more space maybe in our home. You can add on, or you can sometimes remodel. Can you really remodel and add space to a home?
You absolutely can, and I work on a lot of older homes, some historic, most of which I'd describe more as vintage homes. And I think the best way to look at it is an addition is really a remodeling, and the goal is to make the new space and the old space seamless. It doesn't mean that the addition has to look exactly like the old house, but the interior spaces should feel contiguous. And so when you do an addition, you really have to think about remodeling the space that you have, and you might end up not needing an addition at all, is what I've often discovered.
And, you know, I went online to your sites, both of your sites, and you have some, you both have some lovely examples of your work. What's the thought process? Is it the same thought process that you apply to a remodel or an addition?
No, it's a great question, Larry. I mean, a lot of times when we first meet with a client and we're talking about what are the goals, you know, what is your home currently not providing for you that you would like to have? So sometimes it's a matter of taking out some walls or moving a wall to enable the space to function better to meet your needs. Other times you really do need more space. You just can't fit everything that you want to have in your home within the existing walls. And then, of course, sometimes you're either going to take advantage of a lower level that is unfinished, making that a comfortable space that you can use, or bumping up. It's something we've done many times in the Madison area is take a home and what is maybe a half story or an attic that's completely uninhabited, alter the roof line to make it so that you have additional living space in that upper level. So there are a lot of different ways to repurpose and expand a home, sometimes adding more foundation and sometimes living within the current footprint.
Talking about home remodeling and home additions with our two guests today, Chad Spate of Chad's Design Build and Elizabeth Swick of BWZ Architects in Middleton. It's great to have them both here. And thank you so much for listening in. And if you have questions, I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. That's the title of our Facebook page, and certainly we'd love to hear from you. And we have Larry from Nina up with a question, so let's go there. Larry, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I have an east-facing wall in the living room that faces Lake Winnebago. Beautiful view with a nice big window. But what I want to do is turn it into a wall of windows. So two considerations we have to think about. One is we're going to go with windows that don't open so that we can insulate the area. But I am wondering what special precautions I should take to make sure that that area has enough HVAC coverage so that that doesn't get too hot in the summer, too cold in the winter. I have three ducts along the base at the floor level that work just fine presently. So the question really is there major manufacturers who can make such insulated glass that I really shouldn't worry too much about the cold coming through in the winter? The second consideration is because we're going to be getting so much more sun in that room from sunup till about 11 a.m., we'd like to explore the option of smart glass. That is glass that has variable tinting and I've read about a number of different technologies that are available. I don't want to change the clarity of the glass, but just the tinting of the glass. And I'm wondering what is currently available that can be put into standard windows such as Anderson window frames or things of that nature.
Okay.
Well,
yeah, go ahead, Chad.
Yeah, it's an excellent question. There are, as you suggest, Larry, a variety of things that you can do to make that wall of windows more comfortable, depending on the conditions outside and just the time of year and how you're living in the space. I have to confess that there are some newer innovations in glass technology that we have not used with any of our clients. I mean, I've read about things, but they're not things that I have really encountered in the market. And so I will say that there are various films that are commonly applied to glass. And when we order glass for a project from our manufacturers, there are different specifications for that glass. I mean, often we go with a low E glass that is going to reduce the amount of heat transfer when the sun is shining on that glass. There are particular glasses that are best suited for the particular orientation to the sun. So that's something that I would defer to my window supplier for expertise in that area. There are some types of glass that you can literally flick a switch and it will provide tinting. And it has to, there's some sort of electromagnetic magic there.
Process,
that allows it to happen. And I've read about those, but we have not utilized them, and I do suspect that they're quite costly. There's also some tinting that can be added to glass after it's installed to achieve some different effects. But the one thing I want to caution is that you talked about concern for having clear glass, and really whenever you have a tint on the glass, it is almost inevitable that there's going to be some sort of color variation that you will see if you were to compare it to just a piece of glass with nothing special done to it. So there will be some impact on your view, but there will be opportunities to get some samples and look through those and decide what meets your needs based on what you like.
Mm-hmm. Elizabeth, you want to add something to this?
In terms of view, and the one thing I might caution is that you might want to consider operable windows at that location instead of ruling out getting ventilation on the east side of the house.
And why would that be?
Just in a residential application, it's kind of unusual to have inoperable windows. You know, I think everyone's familiar with the standard picture window, but even with that, you've usually got two operable windows on either side of it. And with this large expanse of glass and the view, it just seems like a missed opportunity to give up that opportunity for natural ventilation.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I appreciate that. We actually have other windows in the room that face south that open. We also have an adjoining room that faces the same direction with a walkout door. These are going to be 8 feet tall by 4 feet wide. So I'm thinking that...
That's pretty massive.
Yeah.
This is going to be a wall of windows. So the other question, just didn't know if you had some thoughts on, was, again, we have three forced air vents coming up to the hardwood floor that work quite well in that room. It's not the only ones, but it's along that wall. I just wanted to know if there's any special things we need to look at before we open up that, turn that wall into windows, and therefore find later on we should have varied the HVAC output to that space.
Well, I mean, so what I would say to that is that whenever you put a window in a wall, you are literally putting a hole in the wall. And a high-performance window that would be readily available, that meets the ENERGY STAR code, is actually a window that has an R value of 4. And so if you think of R value as essentially the higher the number, the more insulation or comfort that you are going to expect, the more thermal resistance. The typical wall in a code-built home right now is going to have an R value of 20. So the window is going to have 1/5 of the R value as the wall around it. So you will feel cold air falling off of that glass on a cold winter day or night. It is almost inevitable. Mm-hmm. Well, it is inevitable. And so then you want to think about strategies for shading that window, possibly to address comfort. If you really want a high performance approach, there are homes, if you were building, say, maybe a passive house or some high performance energy home, you might consider an exterior shutter that's literally a massive insulated cover that they basically are brought over the window at night to insulate that glass so that you don't have that problem. But that is a very unusual approach. That too is something that we've never actually done for a client, but I've read about it, and it's a fascinating way to deal with the fact that glass is going to be a hole in the wall.
And we have, just to add my own experience, in our lake home, we have 8-foot by 4 foot windows, 4 across, and then another set above. So we
are the ones above operable, or are they all inoperable?
They were all inoperable,
okay.
But there were side windows that were operable, and so we were able to. But we used interior. Curtains.
Mm-hmm. The cellular shades work well too.
Yeah, that. Right. And frankly, it's on a lake where the wind always blows.
Right.
And so I'm certain that the heating bill was higher after that addition than before it.
Absolutely.
But the comfort was fine. For us, it was okay.
Yeah, I mean, the energy code really, I mean, you're forced to look at that when you build a home. You know, you can't easily build a glass house.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
So
yeah, a few things to think about, Larry.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah,
you
thanks,
bet.
Larry, for calling. Appreciate your call. We have more callers online, but there's a line open for you with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org, or again, post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, and maybe you have a photo of something you have a question about relating to your home. You can post it right there at the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Becca Haas, our on-air producer today. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Today, right now, though, we're talking about your home and home improvements, maybe additions, maybe remodel, with our two guests, Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build in Madison, Elizabeth Swick. Elizabeth, an architect for BWZ Architects in Middleton. It's great to have them both here. Again, the number, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. Just to go back to this whole business about getting started in remodeling or additions, what's the financing like on something like that? Is it difficult? Are there considerations that need, obviously there are some considerations that need to be made, but what about getting financing?
Well, that's a great question, Larry. And of course, the last, 5-6 years after the bubble burst and the real estate market kind of went in the tank, it was a challenging time for people to finance home improvements because a lot of us lost quite a bit of value in our homes. And depending on how much equity you had to start, you might find yourself in the hole. So now that things have been recovering for a while, it seems like it's easier to get financing. It seems like banks are a little bit more willing to expect a modest improvement in property values. So that's making it a little bit easier. And certainly interest rates are still really at a historic lows.
Yes, great.
So
great time for it.
It really is. If you have the equity in your home and you have needs, whether they're maintenance needs or improvements, it's a great time to look at financing that. So
And permits? Permitting, any particular issues associated with permits?
With an addition, I think the first step is to assess the lot you have and first check with zoning. and see how much room you've got available to build. And that might determine whether you build out or up or only stay within the existing footprint.
It was interesting on the home, a previous home, for an addition to the home was not set parallel with the lot. It was canted just a touch. And so that made a difference in how far out you could go with the addition without getting too close to the lot line.
And that's why it's really important to have a site survey before you start.
Yeah.
And that's a great investment just to know exactly what your property is. And I've actually run into that issue where the house was not parallel to the property line. And that's a good point to look into getting a variance, which is a pretty simple process. It just adds another layer of investigation and paperwork, but it's doable.
Yeah, we were able to get a variance. So.
Yeah.
I mean, we've had a couple of circumstances where the existing home is out of compliance with the setback, and a homeowner has wanted to go up, bump up on the second floor, and because where they wanted to bump up was also not in compliance, we had to step back from the edge of that, you know, zoning setback, and the second floor had to comply. You know, in two cases, it was not possible to obtain the variance to do what they wanted to do initially, but we were still able to find a solution that made it work.
Takes a little thought, thought, little planning. Ray and Rhinelander, thank you so much for calling. Hi.
Hi. Well, thank you, Larry, for having these wonderful guests. Thank you, Chad and Elizabeth, for taking time out to educate us. It's well appreciated. I have two questions, and you can ad lib it however you feel. It's about insulation. There's been controversy about over-insulation, under-insulation. I know it depends on where the application is, but people are getting mold in some of these places from way too much insulation, not enough venting. My main concern is I'm going to be putting a slab off of my side of my place. I'm going to be putting a floor on there and building something. What about floor insulation on a direct slab? Should I run my runners, my floor runners, treated lumber just to make sure? What would you do in a situation like that? It's dry ground, dry area, but people have been running into problems with this because in northern Wisconsin, the temperature variances are a little bit different than Madison. And so again, and I'll take your comment off the air.
Mm-hmm. Chad, in that climate, would you recommend rigid insulation under the concrete slab?
Well, definitely if you have the opportunity to insulate under a slab before it's poured, I would always recommend that. And, of course, you're also going to have a vapor barrier that's underneath the slab. But it's interesting. I mean, Ray's concerns about mold being the result of too much insulation, I would suggest that really mold will happen when air leaks into a cavity that might be insulated, but it's not air sealed in a way that prevents air from flowing in and around that cavity. And so if you have hot, moist air that leaks into a wall and then hits a cold surface, it's going to condense, and then you're going to get mold. Or if it's just hitting a cold surface that's poorly insulated to begin with, and maybe there's not a lot of air circulation. So, you know, that problem, it can be difficult to solve in an old home, but it really has to do with air sealing more than the insulating.
Yeah, very interesting. Thanks for that. And let's go to Lindsay and Coleman next. Lindsay, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you for taking my phone call. It was actually great listening to you while I was on hold because you touched a lot on what I wanted to ask. My house is about 30 by 40. And it's right between a river and a pond. So if we're granted our variance, I'd prefer to go up versus out if possible. And I guess from a financial standpoint, I'm wondering success rate, you know, how successful is that move? Is it more expensive to go up versus out? What are your thoughts?
Kind of depends a little bit on the value of the property sometimes, too. If the
right.
You know, if the property per acre is pretty expensive.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's always, I would say that our experience typically is that going up often, I mean, all other things being equal, you're going to spend money on tearing off the roof and protecting the house that's underneath that old roof while you're building the addition. Those costs will offset the savings that you would have otherwise had from not having to excavate and put in a foundation, where you're not having to worry about protecting the home underneath. You just have a hole in the ground. So we often find that there's really not a big difference between going up versus going out from a cost perspective. But then the caveat is, what other alterations will have to be done to the home to accommodate that addition, whether you're going up or whether you're going out? And often it's those improvements that are going to drive cost and may make the difference from doing one versus the other.
Okay.
Well, and in addition to the cost of the tearing off the roof and protecting the house, you've got to provide a new structure for that new floor system, a new roof. And so I think Chad's right that sometimes it's a wash.
Yeah.
One other consideration is the neighbors. Yet another experience I've had with a house. The house that I purchased prior to my purchase of it, the person had done some remodeling and went up a floor, but the neighbor had an all glass sort of side where there were plants that they were growing plants in it, and the roof was going to shade that area.
Oh no! Yeah.
And so the plants were not going to survive, and so he wound up having to lower the roof by a fair amount.
Well, we're actually fortunate. It's out in the country. It's beautiful.
Ah, okay. So you don't have that neighbor issue.
My family, yeah, my parents. So they're great. 99.9% of the time.
Okay. Okay, but still another for other people. It's another thing. If you're living in town and you're going to go up, the neighbors can sometimes can have a say, I think, in what happens.
And if you're in the city, that's another thing that's good to check with zoning first is the height restrictions, and that may determine whether going up makes sense.
Yeah, it's another good thing. All right. Thanks, Lindsay.
Thank you. Yep, I appreciate your time.
Yeah, appreciate the call. You can join in, 1-800-642-1234. I've had altogether too many experiences.
How many houses have you built, Larry?
Well, not a single one, but I spent a lot of money on remodeling various homes. Believe me when I say that. Rick in West Bend, your turn. Hi, Rick.
Hey, good morning. This is for the caller that had an issue with his east exposure of his home, a lot of windows, that kind of thing. To give the scenario we had, our house is about 26 feet wide, about 20 feet in height, and it's all banked with windows. There are two vent windows on each side, and we had a lot of heat in there during the summer months. And just so the people are aware of, there's other options. There's natural options that you can look at as well. And we were looking at the route of putting power blinds in, and very expensive different options. And what we ended up with was we planted a tree there, and it allowed us to get the shade we need in the summer and the hot days, that kind of thing. And in the wintertime, it gave the sunlight to come through and heat the house a little bit. And it's a tree that did not, take away from any of our view. So, but that worked out very well, and I just wanted you to be aware that there are natural options as well.
Yeah, there are indeed. Comment? I mean, it takes a while for that tree to grow and get up to the height that you need.
It does, but it is. I mean, I'm a big fan of having good natural shading, particularly on the south and west sides of buildings for the summertime. And then when you have deciduous trees that are going to shed their leaves and then allow that sun to come through in the winter, that's just it's typically a great approach, particularly on the west side of a house. It can be really tough to...
Many years ago, the place where I was renting, this was way back, we lost a big tree that was out in front. And the year before, all summer long, it was just beautiful in there, and there was no need for air conditioning or anything, right. And that changed entirely. Right. So he's absolutely right.
Yeah.
it can make a huge difference. Thanks, Rick. That's good advice. Appreciate your call. Bob in Dodgeville has a question, so let's go there. Bob, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you. I recently completed my basement, the lower level. It's actually like a split-level house. And I'm concerned about the great temperature differential that I have. I mean, the air conditioner is going full blast upstairs, but downstairs it's freezing.
Right.
Okay.
So what sort of duct work do you, or what do you, I take it you've, do you have?
Forced air.
Okay.
Forced air. And I played around with the dampers, which, you know, before I finished it, I identified where all the dampers were and all of that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But the temperature differential in the summer, especially, is really pretty amazing.
And you're evidently not zoned then, heating and cooling a zoned system?
No.
Yeah.
And generally, we advise our clients, I mean, if you, and I've done this in my own homes, that if you simply close the dampers on the basement supplies so that you're not pumping that conditioned air into the basement, but you still have the return so that you're dehumidifying the air out of the basement, I've often found that that is a successful strategy for the typical home. Is it a ranch home with a finished basement, or is it a, do you have three floors of living space?
Yeah, it's kind of a custom-made house, and it has two floors. There's a loft also.
Okay.
But or it has three floors, I should say, including the loft.
And the thermostat is located where?
On the second floor.
Okay. I mean, sometimes the issue can be the thermostat, that it's in a spot where the system is just going to work way too hard. It's never going to, because of the draft or whatever is going on in the vicinity of the thermostat, you are not going to be able to have the thing shut down frequently enough to prevent you from turning the basement into an icebox. But I would recommend having a heating contractor come and look at it. There are also some consultants out there that can help assess things like this, and you might consider going that path because it really is often a combination of using dampers, maybe considering zoning. I think that, Larry, your comment is an excellent comment, because sometimes you have to just zone it. It's not, the house does not lend itself to allowing one system to do all things. It's just not going to work. So
we have essentially four floors with a basement and three floors. And so zoning seemed to be the only, actually it works really well in the current home that we have, so
right.
Especially that top floor in the summertime. That's the floor that gets warm, you know,
right.
Even with the great insulation we've had. And when you can cool that area and not have to cool the other areas, it's definitely a savings. Bob, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. We had a Facebook question. I have lots of email questions and Facebook questions, but here's one from Corinne, who wonders, how do you remodel or renovate in a manner that protects the health and wellness of the occupants? Sometimes building materials can have impacts. And it would be nice to know how to avoid sort of like sick building issues.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good question as well. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, a lot of that is just knowing what, there are a couple of issues. One is knowing the materials that you're using when you're renovating a home. And then it's also true that a lot of the materials that homeowners bring into a home have formaldehyde in them. A lot of furniture, the foam padding in furniture and in some mattresses has a lot of formaldehyde in it. Carpets can have a lot of toxins in them. And then, of course, paint. Paint and stain that we use in a home have a lot of VOCs, volatile organic compounds, that some people are very sensitive to. So these are all things that we want to look at. And then another thing that contributes to health and air quality in a home is having a good ventilation system that is going to provide for controlled fresh air. And then obviously control humidity and the temperature to keep it comfortable.
And I think there are, I know, well, we did a lot of looking at the last remodel, and there are paints and there are building materials that are free of, to a large extent, to some of the formaldehyde-type things that really create problems. Now, those cost more.
Yes, they do.
They cost more.
Yep.
But you can research, and maybe there's a sort of a compromise that you can put together based on your own research. We did a lot of research on that for that last home remodel, which was essentially a complete redo the whole building,
right?
Redo the whole house.
Well, in terms of interior finishes, one rule of thumb or a way to think about it is to use natural materials like wood, wool for carpets, and the paint manufacturers have done a really good job of addressing this issue, and there are a lot of low and no VOC paints available. But Larry's right, those options will be more expensive.
Yeah. We used a lot of them, and I think we probably used every case, because I think pretty much we avoided most of those issues with the selections that were made. So that's a lot of it goes down to research and then working with whoever your architect or your builder is. And a good builder is going to be certainly familiar with those materials or at least know how to get the information.
I mean, there are builders out there that specialize in that field, and I would, anyone who particularly has chemical sensitivity, it's important to do your research as a consumer and make sure that the individual that you're hiring really does understand those issues and has some experience with it. They probably have some clients that they've helped to renovate the home in a way that was not problematic for their health, and so it'll be important to talk to those people and make sure that you've got the right person.
Let's go to Dane in Eau Claire next. Dane, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. It's Jane, actually.
Oh, Jane. Sorry.
And I don't have a question, but I thought I would just quickly share a remodel story that we did here, which I thought was extremely cost-effective. We're doing the empty nester house. And it's a 1970s ranch, and we opened the living room, kitchen, and dining into kind of one shared area, which didn't really cost a lot, but we got an awful lot of a modern, updated look. And, you know, most of these houses will have an archway into the dining area anyway. And what we did is we cut a pass-through about 7 feet long from the kitchen to the living room. So between the archway and the pass-through, we took out the soffits and the cupboards that hang down dividing the dining area in these houses. There's a lot of these houses out there.
Mm-hmm.
And we did then, you know, new kitchen cabinets and countertops and put recessed lighting in the ceiling. But we used the kitchen designer to install the countertops and the kitchen cabinets and help us choose those. We had a sheetrocker repair the ceiling and put recessed lighting in and patch up where we did this big pass-through. And we did all this for under $15,000 and new floors, common hardwood floors through the whole area, so it really functions like one big room. And, you know, that's the kind of investment that's low enough to actually be really worthwhile in one of these houses.
Huh?
And when you stand in the kitchen, you can see the TV, you can see the fireplace, you look outside through three sides of the house.
Yeah.
The big windows in the living room, floodlight in the kitchen, patio doors and windows in the kitchen at a different time of the day, put light in the living room. And we didn't change the floor plan, we didn't move the sink, the range hoods, that kind of stuff that gets really expensive. So the layout of the kitchen is about the same, but you can always put an extra foot on a countertop somewhere usually, and get a breakfast bar.
Jane, this is why I love hearing from clients who have ranch houses. And they're still some of the most affordable first homes that you can buy. And so I hear from a lot of young families who've bought these. And these houses, especially if they're built in the 50s or 60s, they're in terrific shape, and so you don't have a lot of the infrastructure issues that you have with an older house. They're just kind of boring, and sometimes the interiors are built with little tiny spaces. You walk in the front door, and you're in the living room immediately. There's no entryway. There's a tiny dining room. There's a tiny kitchen. There's a tiny living room, and so what you've done is a brilliant solution to this problem. And as empty nesters, you don't need more square footage, and so an addition doesn't make sense. But what's nice about a lot of simple ranches is that there are no interior bearing walls, and that's what makes this kind of renovation really easy to do, and why you're able to do it on a budget like that, which is amazing. I don't know if we could do that in Madison, but it makes me want to move to Eau Claire. But this idea of changing an outdated floor plan to an open plan in a modern home design, which ranches are the ultimate in the original modernist home, it's a fantastic idea.
Yeah, it's a great idea, and for that price. There had to be a lot of work that you did on your...
must have done a little bit yourself.
Done a little bit of it yourself, Jane. Oh, man, thank you so much for calling. I really appreciate your call. I just have to remind everybody that, tell you what, if you have a question or maybe a great experience like Jane's to share, that'd be okay too. Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post again on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You got some email questions, we'll take those up and some more Facebook. And, of course, more phones here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here as we visit with Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build in Madison, formerly Chad's Carpentry. Elizabeth Swick is an architect with BWZ Architects in Middleton. And both of them, we have links on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. So you can go to my Facebook page, our Facebook page, and you can get the links to their site, chadscarpentry.com or BWZArchitects.com. WZArchitects.com. You just type that in, you'll get a nice look at the variety of things that they're involved in. They have some pretty cool looking work on their site, so we're definitely worth a look. We had an email question from Matthew, who has a thin paneled exterior door that is drafty. Outside of replacing the door, what can Matthew do to make the door less drafty? Can I wrap the door in plastic, for example?
Well, it would be helpful to know how old the door is and what the style of the home is, but the easy answer is a storm door. But, you know, I've lived in Wisconsin for half my life, and I've never grown accustomed to the look, and I'm not crazy about them, but they're kind of an essential in this climate. And one thing that you can do if it's a vintage or historic house is go with a wood screen door that has a glass panel for winter time, and this goes a long way to keeping the curb appeal of the house without resorting to an unsightly storm door. On the other hand, there are a lot of storm doors available, like Anderson makes a really nice one that's full glass, and all you see around the perimeter is a border of about 2.5 inches, and I think that's probably the solution that Matthew's looking for.
That would work. That could work really well. And some of these storm doors, mine, the one we have on the front, is you sort of pull down the window, the glass, and the screen appears in the summer, and then you pull it back up in the winter.
That's even better. Then you don't have to haul the panel up from the basement every season.
That's exactly right. I love that. I love that door. I really love that door because I'm not lugging screens up and down or storms.
Right.
So there you go.
And the other thing that I think we would add in there is that, you know, the weather stripping that you put around these doors.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good point.
It's something that requires ongoing maintenance. I mean, probably every 5 to 10 years, you're going to be updating or replacing the weather stripping around even a modern window. The gaskets wear out. And it's not that the window needs to be replaced or that the door needs to be replaced. It's just that the gaskets need to be replaced, and then that allows you to seal it up. So,
Jill in Racine has a question, so let's go to Jill. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Larry, you look younger on Facebook than you sound over the phone.
Oh, my goodness. So am I sounding pretty old today?
No, Larry.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, our house was built in 1959. It's a brick home, and we're not sure, but should we insulate the walls?
That's always a tricky question.
And controversial. Everyone's got a different idea about the right way to insulate. And so if you said your home was built in 1910, I'd have a definitive answer. Or the 80s, I'd have a definitive answer. But 59, it's hard to know. Is there a vapor barrier existing? Is blown-in insulation?
Without looking carefully at the home itself and how it was built, there's really no way to answer that question. I mean, the one thing that we can say for sure is that a masonry wall, like a brick wall or a stone wall, if you spray water on that wall with just a garden hose, and if you were able to look at the backside of that 4 to 6 inch thick masonry wall, within 15 minutes, you will see water running down the backside of the masonry. Because masonry walls are porous. Water goes right through them. So if you've had a couple of rainy days and there's a driving rain, that water will be just dripping down the back of the masonry. People have a perception that somehow, you know, water doesn't go through these things, but it goes right through them. And so it's really important that whatever we do allows that water to stay outside of the wall and then get back out of the wall, which is why you'll see little weep holes at the bottom of a masonry structure. In a newer masonry wall, they're put in there by requirement because we now understand that we've got to accommodate this water and get it out and not allow it to rot the wall.
Was me, I'd be tempted to go to an energy audit, have somebody come in and actually take a look at it for $300 or whatever, do a blower door test and sort of an evaluation of the home. And
Jill, part of your answer, part of the solution might be maintaining what's there. And like we were talking about with the last question, making sure that all the windows and doors are weather stripped. And are you having, what's the issue that you're having? Are the utility bills high? Are you experiencing water problems? What's going on?
Not really. It didn't have drainage when we moved in. So we had to put drainage in.
They had to put weep holes?
Drainage around the house. There was.
Oh, okay.
So we had to put that in. And we had bats. I know bats eat mosquitoes, but we don't have any in the living room. So we had to redo the roof so we don't have bats anymore.
Okay.
Don't want them in
and
the
we
belfers.
Know there's insulation in the crawl spaces.
So when you say you dealt with the drainage, let me ask you this. Does your home... So did you build up around the home to have a so that the water goes away, or what exactly did you do? Was it putting on gutters and downspouts? How did you address that problem?
Well, someone came in and dug around the house, and then inside they put drainage.
Okay.
Drainage pipes.
So you have a sump pump?
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Great.
There you go. Good. I still think... Someone coming in that knows that can do a blower door and the rest of it for a few $100, and you could go to where would you go online?
Focus on Energy.
Yep. I'm sorry. Yep. You go to Focus on Energy. There are reliable people certainly in Racine area who would come in and give you a lot of pretty good advice for a few hundred bucks.
Yeah, and Jill, when you call the individuals that come up on Focus to schedule an appointment, because you'll get a list of the independent contractors that participate in that plan or in the program, I would encourage you to talk about your specific concerns and the brick and make sure you find someone that's got some comfort and expertise in that area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there we go. Ed, good luck, and thanks. Thanks so much. Probably by the next time Chad's on, you'll have done this, and you can call back again and let us know how it worked out. Thanks, Jill. Judy in Green Bay, your turn. Hi, Judy.
Hi. We have a over 100-year-old house outside of Grand Marais, Minnesota, and it's built of logs, some of them almost a foot thick. My problem is a deck was put on years ago, and it's beautiful. It faces south. And to sit out on that deck on any bright, sunny day is really kind of painful because you get sunburn almost immediately. Is there any way? We also don't have any electricity, so the electrical awnings that you see on TV wouldn't work. Is there any way of providing a shaded area on such a deck?
It depends on what your budget is. I think that's why those awnings that you see in Parade magazine and on TV are popular, because it seems like a simple way to address it. But with a 100-year-old log house, you know, I'd be looking at perhaps a screen porch built on the existing deck, and with overhangs that would provide shading. I don't know, Chad, any other ideas?
Well, perhaps just some sort of a pergola or some sort of you know, gazebo sort of structure that might be able to be put up over the deck, and then that could provide some shading potentially without actually having a roof on it. And it, there again, it would be budget. And, you know, if it's southern exposure, you know, you've got to think about, and when you're going to be out there in the summertime, the sun's going to be pretty high in the sky. So what you really need is up above, but then you probably have to think about the western exposure as well, which it probably gets, and that can be rather uncomfortable at a time of day when we often are out on a porch or a deck like that.
Yeah, it would take looking at. I've seen some log homes with pergola style, and there are ways to make that look pretty good on a log home. And you're in Grand Marais. My goodness, that's about as beautiful a place as you can imagine to begin with. But that pergola idea is not bad. And even, I mean, sometimes you can use, if it's, you know, it sounds like they're probably there for not the whole year.
Right.
You could use even cloth.
I was just thinking that, a canvas awning, and, you know, you'd have to maybe build some supports to hold it so that it's not such a chore to put it up and down every summer. And but a good quality canvas awning, I think you could leave up all summer long.
And the great thing about an awning is that often you can, not only is it much more affordable than building a permanent roof structure, but often there's some zoning issues that would not affect you if for whatever reason you had, you know, a tight spot on the edge or something. So,
not likely a problem in Grand Marais.
That's true. That's true.
But you never know. Tim and Toma, thanks. Thanks for calling.
Now, I've got redoing a bathroom, and I've got hot water register. And I'm wondering if you can tie into that and put it in floor.
So you mean tying in for underfloor heating?
Correct. And get rid of the register, then. It's a piece of furniture in the bathroom, you know.
Yeah, a lot's going to depend. I mean, you're probably going to need to talk to the heating contractor that you use to service the boiler, because there are some systems that operate at a lower temperature, which are appropriate for in-floor heat. And there are other boilers that operate at a much higher temperature in the 160 to 180 degree range, and those generally are not good candidates for putting in floor heat. So if for some reason the heating system is not compatible with in-floor heat, but you really want in-floor heat, you do have some other options where you could remove the boiler from the bathroom and utilize different heating pads that aren't necessarily a part of your boiler system.
Okay. Good. Thanks.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. I appreciate your call. We have lots of, we actually have plenty of open lines right now. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. You can always email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. How do you, how long does a typical project take? Say if you're going to do a remodel in a kitchen, what are you looking at in terms of time?
Well, a full kitchen remodel where you're literally gutting the room, taking everything out, including the flooring and maybe even some of the walls to be able to have a new layout, a new electrical, that's often a 6 to 8 week project.
Yeah.
There are lesser kitchen remodels that can be done for 2 to 4 weeks, but those often aren't as involved.
And we'll talk some more about that. And, of course, take your questions as well as we visit with Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build and Elizabeth Swick of BWZ Architects. But first, let's take a look at the news. Remodeling, home additions with our two guests, Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build in Madison and Elizabeth Swick, architect for BWZ Architects in Middleton. Great to have them both here. Again, you can join us with your own questions or experience to share, 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. John in Dane County has a question for you, too. So let's go to John. Thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi, thank you. I have heard my first criticism of a whole house fan, which I've considered. I've never had air conditioning, but I thought, well, it does get pretty hot in the house, and I usually end up migrating to the basement. But we've lived in this house for 40 years, so I thought, why air conditioning now? But I did consider a whole house fan because many people are swearing by them, but I've had other comments that where in the wintertime they can cause a problem because you can't cover the fan with anything that's comparable to the attic insulation and perhaps can't get enough insulation above the grill. So you could have a condensation problem on the fan unit itself. Do you have any ideas?
Thoughts on that?
Well,
yeah.
I can only speak to whole house fans based on personal experience. I grew up in the South, and the house where I lived as a child had a whole house fan, and they work. And we didn't have air conditioning. And the only time it got really bad was in the extreme heat of the summer, and it's just pulling hot air through the house, and my parents eventually succumbed and got air conditioning. But I've often wondered why they aren't used more in this climate, and maybe you've touched on that with the insulation issue. Have you ever installed one of these, Chad?
Yes, and I've had them in my own homes, and there are a couple of things I would say. There are some manufacturers of whole house fans that have really good insulated lids that close automatically when you turn off the fan, and then when you turn the fan on, the lid opens, and then the fan kicks on. There's a company called Tamarack Technologies, I think out of New York State, and there are a few other companies that make these high-performance whole house fans. That will solve your insulation problem. The other thing is that as far as using them goes, I will say that a whole house fan, if you walk outside of your house and the air temperature and humidity are more comfortable than inside your house, that's the appropriate time to use a whole house fan. If it's hot and humid outside, shut the windows and shut the blinds and don't use the whole house fan because it only works to bring what's outside in. So let's say your house has gotten hot during the day and it's cool outside and you're hot, your house is still hot. That's the appropriate time to open the windows and turn on that fan to bring that cool air inside. You know, you really have to be careful about when you're using it.
But I do have a south-facing picture window, so it does get pretty hot in the upper floor. But it was more a wintertime concern that this person
brought up. Yeah, and you're saying not of concern.
Not if you put in the right type of fan, and then if you put in a fan that really isn't designed to be sealed up there, and then you have the ability to get up in the attic and put a lid that seals over top of where the fan is for the winter months, that would be another approach that I've seen, which is successful.
Okay. There we go. Good luck, John. Thank you very much for calling. I want to give Mark and Delafield a chance to join us. Mark, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I've got a pretty unique problem, I think. I've done pretty extensive research and but on the other hand, here we have two more really bright people, and I thought I'd run this past you folks. Okay, with that in mind, I have a house that was built in the 50s, and originally the house was all electric. At some point in time, there was an addition put on the house, and they also, at that same time, they converted the first floor to gas forced air, but all the bedrooms upstairs are still all electric. You know, this is fine throughout the course of the year, but when we get to the winter months and have to start turning on that electric heat up in the bedrooms, even if we keep it down quite a bit, my bill goes up pretty significantly for utilities. Now, I have had HVAC people out here thoroughly looked at the house to see if there's a way to get runs up into the second floor, and that there's just no simple, cost-effective way to do that. I even looked at one of these Mitsubishi systems that probably could be a solution, but it's pretty expensive to have that over and above on top of the gas forced air. So I'm not finding a solution to get gas forced air upstairs, and here's what I was thinking. Now, you're welcome to shoot holes in this. In the old days, a lot of houses used to have a grate in the floor that went from the ceiling up to the second level where hot air kind of went up through those grates. And I was thinking of
just that when you were, as you were talking, Mark, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it may not be a great solution, but if at least I could, you know.
Well, it's a great solution in one way, G-R-A-T-E.
Oh, you're good. Okay. All right, what are your folks there?
Well, yeah, let's listen to the experts. What about it, Chad? What do you think?
Well, I do think that is a great idea. And the other thing is that I don't know how well insulated the house is, but when you're dealing with a home that is expensive to heat or cool, the first question I always ask is how tight is the home? How well insulated is the attic? I mean, generally the attic in an old home is the easy place to properly air seal and insulate and get a lot of return on your investment, because it's really going to improve your comfort in the home, and it's going to make it so that those electric baseboard heating units are not costing you an arm and a leg to operate. But I do really like the idea of finding some places to allow the air to flow up there naturally, and then create more comfort in the home. The other thing that I was thinking about while you were explaining your situation, it might be possible to install a separate gas furnace up in the attic with ductwork in the attic. But the huge red flag with that system typically is that you want that furnace to ideally be in a conditioned space. Mm-hmm. And it's critically important, if any ductwork is put in the attic, that prior to installing it, the attic is air sealed and tested, and then that the ductwork is air sealed and tested, because you do not want to have the heat leaking into the attic through that system. But that might be a way to...
Yeah, let me give you just a tiny bit of feedback regarding that. One, I have had insulation, significant insulation blown into the attic. There's one other place where the addition meets the old house. I'm actually having the drywall taken off the one wall because there's next to no insulation behind that. I'm going to have that re-insulated, then re-drywalled. And then the other thing about this house is because it was all electric, it does have air conditioning, but it's a Unico system, and that's in the attic already. And then, you know, all those pipes coming through the ceiling, which is a great air conditioning system.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, you can't add... You know, I was hoping that Unico would be able to add a heat pump to that, but that doesn't seem to be a solution either.
Oh.
So, anyway, well, okay, my great idea, G-R-A-T-E or G-R-E-A-T, might be worth checking out, and we'll see how it goes this winter.
Yeah, I've got a whole bunch of grates for you, I'll sell you. Left over from my own remodel. We
nice.
Actually do have some grates. I don't even...
Good luck.
I don't know what I'm going to do with them, though. Mark, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. We have Anna in Lake Geneva up next. So let's go to Anna. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi there. How are you doing?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
My fiance and I just bought our first home, and we decided to do our kitchen remodel, and it's just about done. We're waiting on our countertops, so we're thinking about the next step. And we have well water. And we've never had well water before in our homes prior. And so we want to do an in-house filtration system because we feel like we like it personally. But we didn't know if it would actually benefit the house itself. And then what type of filtration system should we go for?
So you're talking about water filtration system.
Yes.
Well, I do have a whole house water filter. Because we had little kids, and you know how first-time parents get all paranoid about what they're putting in their kids. And so it's pretty easy to deal with. We change the filter once every 6 months. But I don't have any experience with well water, and I'm not sure what those issues are.
Yeah, I mean, I would recommend that you have the water tested, and I think most counties in Wisconsin, there's an extension that will help with that. It's something that it's reasonably inexpensive to get it tested. And then the other thing is that I know reverse osmosis systems for drinking water are typically the most effective at eliminating almost all of the contaminants that you'll find in the water. But those are also the more expensive filtration systems.
Yeah, and you really probably should get your well water tested. And in fact, I've had people on the show, experts on the show, and they typically recommend, you know, every couple of years, just get it tested.
Right.
And the testing is pretty inexpensive, and there are state labs that do it. So
right.
I'd start with that.
We've had our well water tested, and they said that it's like the satisfactory, and they just said that there is a little bit more iron in it, and as far as I know, that
iron's not an issue.
Right, right. And so it's just the taste of the water that we don't like, and then, of course, I don't like having to clean the toilets every day because of that ring.
Oh, it's really a lot of iron. Okay.
Yeah. And then another part was when we go to Home Depot and, like, Lowe's and stuff, they have the filtration system that you can install, and it'll distribute it throughout the household. And it says that it doesn't need to be replaced, which also brought up question to me, because how do you not have to replace the filtration system?
You'd
feel like that was a little bit skeptical too.
I think you'd have to replace the filter. There has to be a filter.
Was it a softener?
Lifetime.
Was it a water softener, maybe? Because, I mean, those, you typically use salt pellets, and that regenerates.
And we do have a water softener as well.
Okay.
Well, I don't know how you could have a filtration system without having a filter to replace.
Right.
That's what I'm asking, like.
So there, unless there's some sort of chemical process that goes on that changes the iron,
right?
I and I've never heard of one, but maybe there is. That doesn't mean anything just because I haven't heard of it. There may well be something out there, but I'd be skeptical about that.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm calling. Do you have any suggestions? Do you have any recommendations, maybe?
Well, I would generally bring one of our plumbers into the discussion, and so I don't know if you've been working with a plumber that you trust in your area there, so that you know you might go that path and see what some of the professionals in the area might recommend to deal with it. So.
Especially a local plumber. I bet you, if you've got water like that, so has everybody else in the neighborhood, and so there's got to be, even if you went next door to a few of the homes in the area, you'd probably find somebody who would recommend a plumber.
Right.
Almost for sure. Good luck. Thank you, Anna, for calling. Appreciate it very much. John in Janesville. Hi. Thanks for calling.
How are you doing?
Great. Appreciate your call. What have you got for us today?
I was wondering, I want to take out the bathtub in the main bathroom and just put in a shower. But every place I've contacted is like $8,000 to $10,000, and I'm thinking that's ridiculous. I was just wondering how much, just a normal shower can cost to put in.
Well,
they say, you need all new plumbing, you need all this new stuff. And
well, they probably, were they trying to sell you on just putting the shower inside the tub?
Well, they first wanted to do that, and then they're like, you want it out? And I said, yeah, just take a saw and cut the thing out.
That's where your extra cost is coming in.
Yeah, I mean, it's not unreasonable, certainly. And in fact, I would say that probably is the lower end of what it's going to take to tear out a tub and then put in a proper shower pan and completely redo the walls. You need
and
them
the
to
floor.
Be. Yeah, it's all got to be properly waterproofed. And I mean, there are the least expensive approach is going to be some sort of a modular unit that the three walls will bolt into the base. And they'll all bolt together in place, but that's probably going to be your $8,000 to $10,000 conversion. And as Larry said, you've got to deal with where the old floor meets the new shower base. You might put a door on it, or you can have a curtain. But a lot of times, when you go to an all shower, they end up having a door. So these are all factors that are going to contribute to cost.
Okay. I didn't think it would be that much. I was thinking around $2,000.
No. Well, maybe if you just leave the tub.
Yeah, typically.
Yeah.
It's always a little dangerous to talk about what things cost because there's a wide range. I mean, when we talk to clients about bathroom remodels, I often say, well, what does a car cost? You know, you can get a car for $15,000 or you can spend $60,000. And, or more or less, but it all is going to come down to the details. And, bathroom remodels often cost $20,000, $30,000. But, of course, again, there is a wide range. The tub and shower area always constitute half of that cost. And $10,000 is not unreasonable.
Hmm.
Okay. So thank you for your help.
Yeah, you might consider leaving that tub in.
Yeah.
And actually, if you could make a shower, typically you could probably do it for a lot less than $2,000 if you left the tub in.
Yeah, and if the concern is safety of how, it does get difficult as we, a lot of our clients are talking about aging in place and wanting to safely be able to get in and out of a tub that they really just use as a shower. A really good thing to do is install some heavy-duty grab bars that just make it easy to make that step over the side of the tub, and then that can go a long way to making you secure and happy in your existing space.
Jolene had an email question for us, wondering what do you guys recommend for replumbing water pipes in an old farmhouse that has original galvanized steel pipes from 1934. Are the PEX pipes safe for drinking water, or what do you recommend when it comes to remodeling, when it comes to water pipes?
A lot of my clients have been hesitant about adopting PEX, and they've been on the market. That product has been on the market for a long time, and I haven't seen any issues with it. Chad?
Yeah, no, as far as I know, that's one of the safest
materials?
Synthetic or plastic kind of pipes, so it's very stable. It doesn't have issues with, toxins leaching out of it and things like that, which some of the other systems have problems.
And it's durable. It's no more likely to rupture than conventional piping.
Right.
And we had a Facebook question from Scott. I've asked window contractors for the R value on windows. Only one gave me the value. All others said windows are not rated with R values. Who is right?
Well, so technically that's true. Windows are rated with what's called a U value. And the way you convert a U value to an R value is that it's the inverse. So in other words, an R value of 4, which would be 4 over 1, is a U value of 0.25, 1 over 4.
Okay.
So, like a R5 window would actually be considered a U value of 0.20. So that is how windows are rated, and I can't speak to why that's done that way, but it is possible to convert a U value to an R value.
There you go.
So,
and Cheryl in Conover has a comment for us. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi. With all these things that went on, I could have like 10 comments, but the one that I wanted to make was about the air conditioning. I've had an all-house fan, and they were awful. And you're absolutely right. You can't use them in the humidity. And if you're going to increase the value of your home and with the business that I'm in, you're better off having it. If you have forced air, you're better off getting an air conditioning unit, because not only does it help with the humidity, but it'll help with your furniture if you have wood furniture or wood floors. And also, it's a comfort thing. I found that having central air was more comfortable, especially in those high humidity times, versus that fan. I had one of those, and it was like Nightmare on Elm Street.
Cheryl, you had the wrong fan, for sure. But there's, I think, a lot of truth to what she says, and really, comfort is what it's all about in the end, isn't it? I mean, I want to be comfortable.
Yep.
I do not want to be uncomfortable in my own house.
Absolutely.
And I thank you so much for that comment. And I've had friends who've had whole house fans, and frankly, Cheryl, I have one that hated it and one that loved it. And so there you go. And here we go. We're out of time. Chad, Elizabeth, thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. We had a great set of questions today. We covered
Absolutely.
A broad range of things.
It's always great to be here. Thank you, Larry.
Yeah, thanks, Larry. It's nice to be here.
We'll do it again. Chad Spate, Chad's Design Build in Madison, chadscarpentry.com. That's a place to go. And go to Elizabeth Swick, who is an architect at BWZ Architects in Middleton. And her site is www.bwzarchitects.com. And as a matter of fact, both those are up on our Facebook page at the Larry Miller Show. And if you just want to go there, you can click on them there and go right to their sites. They've got a lot of good examples of their work. Tomorrow it's Garden Talk time. And have you divided your bulbs? How about peonies? We'll talk about that. And there's something called brown marmorated stink bugs. Oh, my goodness me. We've talked about them once, and the old stink bug is coming back tomorrow for a little bit of discussion on Garden Talk. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.